This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Video games. You probably play them, right? Well, if not you, I will bet that someone very close to you does, because more than 3 billion people around the world do, according to the Amsterdam-based data firm Newzoo. And the games vary wonderfully and wildly. There are mobile games like Cat Snack Bar, where you are a restaurant tycoon who also happens to be a cat, and you take orders, cook food, and serve guests. And then there are, of course, the console games, like Red Dead Redemption, a Western adventure set in the American Southwest and Mexico, and in that one, you're a former outlaw hunting down your old gang members. Then there is the beloved Italian plumber Mario. Since his first appearance in 1981 in the arcade game Donkey Kong, Mario has spawned more than 200 games of various genres and subgenres, and get this, as far back as 1990, a survey found that Mario was so popular, kids back then recognized him more often than they did Mickey Mouse. So all of this is to say that video games are a big business. They're a huge business, in fact. Worldwide, the gaming market is expected to hit roughly $190 billion in revenue this year. The gaming industry makes more money than Hollywood. It makes more money than North American sports. So why, as of late, have gaming companies been laying off people at an unprecedented level? Industry estimates show that around 8,000 developers have lost their jobs this year. That's a massive spike from previous years. So what is actually going on? That's what we're going to want to explore today. And we'll start with Diana Laura. She's worked in the gaming industry for about a decade and a half. And until recently, she was the former senior licensing producer and production manager for the game Star Wars Hunters. That's the full name. And that was at the company Zynga. Diana, welcome to you.
Oh, thank you for having me. This is a delight. I'm a big fan.
I am not really an intense gamer, but I have been watching in awe as the industry has been growing since those early Mario days, which I don't want to date myself by saying that I, in fact, played that game. But Diana, I actually want to start at the beginning of your career, that decade and a half ago. What was the first game that you worked on?
Well, I actually started out in theater. Uh-huh. So I went to school for musical theater, from there, actually was an early day content creator press type person. So those were my early days in gaming. My first official game was a Japanese mobile gaming company that doesn't exist anymore. If we want to talk about the volatility of the industry. But it's this Japanese mobile gaming company. So I was making otome games for women, like drama, romance type games for the mobile.
Wow.
For the mobile market. Yeah, it was pretty fun.
Okay. And so what drew you into sort of moving into the industry full time? Like, what was it about it that made it an exciting place to be?
Oh, I just love it. I mean, it really comes from, I think that the gem of being in theater, a bunch of creative weirdos coming together, making awesome things and putting it out into the world. I mean, what's not to love about that? It's the same concept of when you're making a show on Broadway, or when you're making a movie, or when you're making music. It's that creative outlet. It's a bug. You love it.
Yeah. Well, so actually, now that you mentioned movies, audiences for films have been like very, very habituated for a long time, that they know credits are going to come at the end, right? So they know that it takes hundreds and hundreds of people to make one movie, right? Whether or not they sit around for the credits. Can you give us a sense as to how many people it takes to make a modern day, let's say, like, you know, big headlining video game?
Like a blockbuster type game? I mean, you could easily say it's hundreds. It arguably like at least 500 to 1,000 people. I mean, it really depends on what you're making. But, you know, you have the concept of these blockbuster games that need many studios that that need a lot of people and need a lot of expertise to sort of put it out, to make the cool things that we're playing and that we're seeing, and make the water shimmer and makes the character's hair, you know, flow. That takes a group of people to make. And so, you know, you could argue it really depends. It really depends, because there are games that take that make one person makes it, you know, a group of 10. But, you know, it could be upwards to the hundreds of thousands.
So in that case, it's very similar in terms of the variability of how much talent it takes, just like we see, you know, in films. OK, well, mm-hmm. so you're a gamer yourself, too, right?
Yeah, I am.
Okay,
yeah,
would you mind naming like one or two of your favorites?
Oh my gosh, I'm obsessed with Baldur's Gate 3 right now. They just released a patch, so I need to jump back in. But I'm obsessed with Baldur's Gate 3. I'm playing like Dave the Diver. Occasionally playing Diablo with my partner. I have like a cycle of games that I kind of go through, because my backlog is ridiculous. There are too many games coming out right now, so it's always a good time. It's always something to do.
Okay, so. But you're not working for Zynga anymore.
No, not anymore, no.
What happened?
I got laid off, which is the part of the industry, right?
I mean,
yeah, you make a game and then eventually you get laid off. Sorry for laughing. It's very dark.
You know what? I'm glad you can laugh about it, because it's the only way to push back the darkness.
Exactly.
So, I mean, I don't know. I mean, did that come in sort of an expected round of layoffs from Zynga? Or was it finished and then there's churn naturally? I mean, how did it happen?
It was unexpected. It's, you know, I think at this point we're starting to get wise, at least the developers are. We're starting to get wise that when the third quarter hits, if things are looking scary, that, you know, there's a slight possibility that layoffs may happen. You have your town halls and you have your meetings with your leads, and they're like, no, you know, we're projecting record profits. Everything looks fantastic. Everything looks great. And the next thing you know, like a week later, you're being brought into a room with HR, and they're like, hey, thanks, but, you know, you've been let go for redundancy. And you're like, wait a minute, hold on a second. I thought we were struggling.
Yeah.
How am I redundant?
Well, the game that you were working on, Star Wars Hunters, mm-hmm. was it done when you got laid off or not?
No, it's still in the middle of production, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so help me understand something. We're going to talk with a reporter who covers the gaming industry extensively in just a minute here.
Yes.
But was the so you were saying the message you were getting was things are going well for the company, but then you got laid off, what, like a week or two later?
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much.
Okay. And how many of your fellow colleagues got laid off too?
You know, I don't know.
Okay.
I know there was a handful of us, but I sincerely don't know. It's much as we know of the 8,000 people that have been laid off, it could be potentially even more than that, because, you know, there are a lot of companies that aren't announcing layoffs or you have one person who disappears one day, or five people who disappear another day, and then, you know, you don't know. You just don't know. And then, you know, you also have, like, you don't want to say anything, like, bad about the company, or you don't want to say, hey, I just got laid off, because of the shame and stuff that comes along with it. And so numbers may be even higher than we think.
Well, so, Diana, does the industry, from the point of view of the workers, does it feel different now than it did when you first sort of dove into it that 15-ish years ago?
I think so. It definitely bigger budgets, a lot more expectations. You know, games as a service / live service games, where you know, instead of just having like a standard like one game, your game that comes out. Remember, if we want to go back to like Super Mario Brothers, you have that one game, one and done. But now you have these games that are like, you know, multi-yeared, sometimes have 10-year plans.
Wow.
So it's like, so the expectation, an exponential growth It makes it so that like the games like last longer,
productions
last longer, things cost more money. You know, the tech gets fancier, so you need to have the hair that looks like it's real and it's blowing in the wind. So the expectations in the gaming industry are definitely higher.
Okay.
So that's where you have like this. You have like, you know, this sort of this disconnect of like, we have, you know, where they're saying record profits, lots of money is being made. But then, however, you know, it's also supposed to be super volatile. And they're, you know, investments in NFTs, Bitcoin, Metaverse, you know. And so the companies are hiring out to build out these, those particular industries. The cost that it makes these games, like they're like these are blockbuster games that, you know, $10 to $100 million.
So, yeah. Wow. Well,
it's a lot different.
We have about a minute before our break. And after that, we're going to get kind of a really deep business analysis of what's going on here. But,
cool.
You know, Diane, I imagine that a lot of listeners, gamers or not right now, are just being like, meh. So there's like tech layoffs going on, all over different parts of the tech industry. And As a gamer, as long as the game comes out and I can play it, like, so what's the big deal? Churn is churn. What would you say to that?
I would say that that's an unfortunate thing. I think that, you know, it's an unfortunate thought process. You have a situation where these games are being made under, in some cases, duress. We need to have some form of unification. I'm very, very vocal about talking unionization. The industry is still very, very young. We need to have some form of protections, because I personally don't feel comfortable playing games where I know that the people who made it are under duress.
Interesting. Again, it seems to me that there's a relationship to the entertainment industry as a whole, right? Because we just experienced months-long strikes, right? In Hollywood, for people just trying to, you know, put their foot down and say enough is enough. So looking at how that's playing out in the video game industry is what we're doing this hour. And when we come back after the break, we're going to hear from a senior reporter who's taken many deep dives into the business of gaming. So that's when we come back. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/onpoint. That's Indeed.com/onpoint. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
You're back with On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. And just a quick nod to what's happening over in our podcast feed. It is Friday, which means today we dropped the weekly Jackpod. And that features On Point News analyst Jack Beatty and his really singular analysis of what's going on in American life today. And you'll really want to listen to this one because Jack talks about this question of government's obligation or not to provide a certainty of existence. It's a really, really good episode of the Jackpod. So head over to our On Point podcast feed. If you haven't already, subscribe to it as well so you won't miss an episode of Jack and his view of the world. Today, right now, we're talking about the giant spike in layoffs in the video gaming industry and what's driving that, trying to understand what's driving that, given that the gaming industry is as profitable as ever. I'm joined today by Diana Laura, and until a little bit earlier this year, she worked as former senior licensing producer, I should say just worked as a senior licensing producer and production manager at the gaming company Zynga. Now, Diana, hold on for a second because it's time for me to bring in Nicole Carpenter, and she's a senior reporter at Polygon. It's a website covering video games and pop culture. Nicole, welcome to On Point.
Hi, thank you for having me.
So help us get an understanding of the shape of the industry, first of all. When I hear or read that 6,000, 7,000, possibly even 8,000 people have been laid off in the gaming industry, it's hard for me to know if that's a significant number or not. Do we know about how many people overall are in the industry?
It's hard to say how many people are in the industry overall because beyond just the core development, there's support studios. There are a ton of people. But to put this into context, I was looking over some sort of unofficial layoff trackers from years prior. In 2022, the kind of unofficial number there was 2,000 layoffs compared to, like you said, the 8,000, which honestly is probably a little bit low because companies don't report numbers all the time. Important context there, 2022 is also a volatile year for the video game industry. So 2,000 layoffs, a little bit, that wasn't great to see either. So it is safe to say that this year has been unprecedented for seeing these kind of layoffs.
Okay, good. That's important context, right? Because, you know, companies go through different cycles. But if we're seeing a cross-sector cycle or activity here, it's worthy of note. So obviously, I kind of want to understand what's driving this. For example, we reached out to a bunch of different companies for comment or see if they'd come on. For this hour, almost all of them said no. And those include Niantic, Unity, Bungie, Embracer Group, Epic Games, ByteDance, and EA Games. So let me just focus on Electronic Arts here for a second, because a little earlier this year, around May, right, they gave us their fiscal year-end finances, right, the picture of it. And they said for this past fiscal year, EA had a $7.426 billion in net revenue. That's just for one company. Mm-hmm. But even but slightly earlier than that, just a month or two earlier than that, in March, EA said it was laying off 6% of its workforce. Is there an explanation for that, Nicole?
The explanation that companies are giving are the economic situation. And part of that is that games are bigger than ever. They're taking longer to make. They cost more money. And companies are looking to have less risk there. And so, you know, by decreasing headcount, it isn't an awful but sure way to, you know, bring those profits up for shareholders. But one of the other things that we're seeing is come down from the pandemic. During the pandemic, the gaming industry had a huge boom. And since then, you know, growth has slowed. However, you mentioned the video game industry, it's valued at, you know, almost $200 billion. It's like $184 mm-hmm. billion. It decreased in 2022. But it was still above, well above $100 billion. But so anyways, what I'm trying to say there is that companies are seeing that decrease in revenue from the pandemic. They may be overhired there and are trying to kind of correct in that way. They were looking for kind of that short-term profit rather than kind of that long-term sustainability, and they're The workers are paying for it now.
Okay, this is starting to sound familiar. And Diane, I hear you mm-hmming. Tell me what you think.
Yeah, I'm mm-hming. Well, I mean, I think she, you know, she's right. I think that also, you know, on top of that, I've also been in, you know, not in my last company, but in other companies as well. I've been in the shareholders meetings where they're like, profits are high, you know, record profits. They have layoffs, but then, you know, you it's time to vote for to see if the executives get their raise. So I think that there's a combination of, yeah, there is an over use of the volatility of the investments of all these different, you know, tech and things like that, because obviously it takes money, it takes time, it takes people, and you know they're trying to save money, but at the same time you have the shareholders who are also asking for raises. So you know, where I keep consistently saying the math isn't mathing. you're telling me you're making a ton of money. you're telling me that you want a raise, and yet it takes my coworkers, months, sometimes years, to get a raise, or to take a day off. Yeah. So it's like, what are you talking about here? Like, that doesn't make any sense. And so I think that's where you have like a little bit of the indignancy of like this 8,000 people being laid off, and the frustration that comes from it, because you know the executives right now are sitting up there, and they're saying that, like, gosh, you know, if only we could make more money. And it's just like, how much more money do you need, bro?
Well,
that makes no sense.
You know, I this is getting me thinking that perhaps, and Nicole, is this a sign of sort of the maturation of the video game industry overall, mm-hmm. because all of the things that we're talking about here can be applied to so many other industries, and they've sort of reached that point before. Like, again, just sticking with EA as an example, when they announced that 6% job cut, CEO Andrew Wilson said that, you know, they wanted to drive a, quote, greater focus across their portfolio, and they were moving away from projects that did not contribute to their strategy. And I think most importantly, what they told to their shareholders is, yeah, they missed some quarterly estimates on revenue. So in order to maintain that return, I think that shareholders were expecting, the easiest way to do that was to cut headcount. And I could just remove the phrase video gaming industry and replace it with almost any other, and it would sound mm-hmm. exactly the same. So is this just a maturation of the industry, Nicole?
You know, I'm not sure. I think that it is moving, you know, this is a reflection of what the tech industry is going through. But, do you want the industry to continue to be volatile like that? Do you want the industry to continue to be driven by shareholder interest? Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'm not sure if it's a maturation. And I'm also not sure if that's a path that the industry wants to continue down, at least, you know, when we're talking about the workers and not the shareholders.
Right. Because I was going to ask for a clarification on industry, but I appreciate that you beat me to it, Nicole. Well, so in terms of some of the impacts, layoffs plus working conditions that developers and employees are seeing in the video game industry, Diana and Nicole, I wonder if you could just hang with me here for a minute and listen through a story that's been told within the industry, but I want to share with listeners. And it's about a game called Cyberpunk 2077. And I know that's going to sound familiar to both of you. For those of you who don't know it, it's set in a very gritty dystopian world called Night City. And you, as the player, are a mercenary named V. And the goal of the game, more or less, is to try to keep your mind from being overwritten by an experimental biochip. Okay, so that's the premise of the game. And it was very, very anticipated because back in 2020, Cyberpunk was expected to be one of the best releases of that year. And the company behind the game, CD Projekt Red, had reportedly been working on the game for about 8 years already. And in fact, Cyberpunk was so highly anticipated that at least one developer said they got death threats when the release date was pushed back. Well, finally, on December 10th, 2020, Cyberpunk 2077 got its big release.
This game is an unfinished, broken, buggy mess, and you should not play it or buy it in its current state.
Today, we'll be counting down our picks for the top 10 hilarious Cyberpunk 2077 bugs and glitches.
It is not an exaggeration to say that I felt nauseated after playing because of the terrible frame rate. It really is that bad.
Okay, so clearly the release fell like a lead balloon, according to YouTubers Critical Nobody, Ricky with WatchMojo, and Destin Legary. It had problems. Among them, the scenery was slow to load. Non-player characters would stay stuck in a default T-pose with their arms stuck straight out to the sides. Trees defied the laws of nature, which might have been okay, given that this was an imaginary world, but gamers weren't having it.
Tiny trees covered the map, growing through the floors, in vehicles, and even suspended in the air.
Ricky with WatchMojo there again. Well, Cyberpunk 2077 was so buggy that Sony pulled it from the PlayStation Store just days after the game was released. And that brings us to Paula Moskevich Armstrong. She watched the bad press roll in, and she works as a quality assurance coordinator at CD Projekt Red and spent a lot of time on Cyberpunk.
It was hard. It was not a good time for anybody, really. We all felt like, you know, we failed, and also that things were profoundly wrong during the development. Looking at the review scores was not a good feeling. I had a policy of don't read the comments, because just don't.
Paula says she and others at the company knew the game was not ready. The developers were crunching. That's where the team works basically around the clock to finish up a game, often working right up to the release. It wasn't enough. Though they asked for more time, they were told they had to meet the release date.
You work, 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 work. You have food at some point. You leave, you do barely anything before you go to bed and do it all again. Everybody is having problems and we're trying to work it out and support one another. And then it's only after the crunch ends that you kind of realize the cost of, I don't know, I gained a few kilos because I wasn't eating well. Like, my eyes are super strained. I am so tired and low energy. You kind of just go crashing down.
After Cyberpunk 2077 was pulled from the market, Paula and others kept working on improvements. CD Projekt Red released a number of bug fixes over the next couple of years. But something else also changed. Paula and her colleagues unionized under the Polish Game Dev Workers Union. And just a few months ago, an expansion game to Cyberpunk 2077 came out, and that's called Phantom Liberty. Reviews are good. It was even nominated for some awards, and Paula says she hopes CD Projekt Red is taking notes.
I think the company has learned that there is no magic solution to make everything work out. Phantom Liberty, the expansion, definitely shows that the change to approach has worked, and, you know, giving it as much time as it needed. And it was a much better experience watching the review scores for the expansion than for the base game.
That's Paula Moskevich Armstrong, a quality assurance coordinator at CD Projekt Red. Okay, Diana, let me turn to you because you've lived this life.
Yes.
Talk a little bit more about crunching. It seems like it's a part of working in the industry already.
Yeah, I mean, she's right. She's right. There's no other way to say it. She's totally right. It's crunching is ridiculous. It's due to poor planning. It's due to shareholder pressure. You know, management pressure. It's promising, over promising. From management that then, you know, trickles down to folks like QA and folks like production and who need to sort of try and manage these expectations that, you know, that management has given, and the pressure that the shareholders want. They want their quarterly earnings to, you know, exceed the last quarter, you know? So and what ends up happening is that there's only so much that you can do, and there are only so many hours in the day, and crunch is the inevitable thing that happens, and crunch has broken up families. It has delayed you know, people from having children. You know, there've been divorce, there's been heart attacks, you know, I don't want to say deaths, but like but health issues. So crunch is a thing that the industry, mental health is also layered into that. That it's important, and it's a thing that's a part of this industry where we need to have a serious, serious conversation about the churn of talent that is burnt out. You know, the joke is that if you've been in the industry for more than 5 years, you're already a veteran. Because, because if you can survive 5 years of development, then you can do anything. I'm ancient. I am you know, I'm falling and crumbling into dust at this point. There are some people, you know, who are in, you've been in the industry for 20, 30 years, and I'm like, how are you alive? So, you know, it's a thing. So crunch is inevitable, but it shouldn't be, and it doesn't have to be. And we need to stand up, and we need to like prevent that. It's a common thing.
Okay. Nicole, we have about 30 seconds before we have to take our next break. Are there indications of any kind of change in the working culture in the industry, given, you know, Diana isn't the first one to voice complaints over crunch culture?
Absolutely. Over the past couple of years, the video game industry has pushed towards unionization, and we see that change, and mm-hmm. we see workers having a say in their working conditions.
Okay.
Well, it's about time.
Yeah. When we come back, I want to hear more about sort of the changes that are going on, but also dig deeper into, you know, why this is happening in such what gamers and people outside the industry might think is such a vibrant, you know, world right now. So we'll come back to that in a moment. This is On Point.
A gruesome scandal at the nation's most prestigious university shines a light on a macabre and lucrative world of buying and selling human remains.
Human body parts taken by a manager at the Harvard Medical School morgue and then sold to customers online.
So my first skull is right there on the top shelf. That's my first and my favorite.
I'm reporter Allie Jarmani, and this story raises some tough questions. How should we treat the dead? And who gets to decide?
There should be some middle ground where we treat deceased tissues differently than we treat old refrigerators.
This is Postmortem, The Stolen Bodies of Harvard, a new season of WBUR's Last Scene. Listen and follow Last Scene wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. And a quick note here, because we want your input on a show we're working on for the near future. And it's about how to talk with your kids or children in general about climate change. So if you're a parent or a family, an older family member or a mentor, how do you talk to kids about climate change when they ask you questions about it? Obviously, this might be a big issue for teachers as well, if at all. So how do you respond to them? What do you say? If you're a young person listening, what kind of conversations do you wish you could have with the adults in your life about all the news that might be storming your various feeds or just in the air about our changing planet? So share your experience by recording a message in the On Point Vox Pop app. If you don't have it, once again, I ask you why. But I'll give you a chance to go to wherever you get your apps and just search for On Point Vox Pop. You can also leave us a regular phone message at 617-353-0683. So talking with kids, talking with young people about climate change. And we're doing this show with the acknowledgement that kids have also been quite profound leaders in awareness about climate change as well. But today we're talking about massive layoffs in the video gaming industry, even as the industry continues significant growth, making it bigger than Hollywood or bigger than North American sports. I'm joined today by Diana Laura. She's been working in the gaming industry for about 15 years until earlier this year when she was laid off from Zynga. And Nicole Carpenter is with us as well. She's senior reporter at Polygon. So, Diana and Nicole, we spoke with Rachel Cederberg, a senior economist and research manager at Lightcast, and that's a labor market analytics firm. And she helped us get kind of a bigger view here about layoffs across the tech industry as a whole. Obviously, we're talking about video gaming today, but people have heard of huge layoffs at places like Meta, Google, Amazon, Microsoft. Could that be, A, because of high interest rates have to force some changes in businesses, or could it be because of shifting priorities to less expensive efforts?
We saw huge, huge gains in all of these companies, or near all of these companies, over the last few years in terms of bringing on new hires, trying different products and services. And so there's always going to be a period where the company takes a step back and assesses what their options are. It's not inherently that the company's in trouble.
So, Nicole Carpenter, what do you think about that?
Yeah, that's I absolutely agree with that, because we see for the companies that are public, we can see the profits. We can see that the companies are not struggling, but they are taking a look at, you know, the company, assessing it and making those layoffs to, you know, meet the needs that they've set out.
So what are they then in the gaming industry? What are people, what are companies starting to focus on? Because I read that, you know, that statement from EA, and it implied that they were going to abandon projects that didn't kind of match the direction they wanted the company to go. Is that a sign of less experimentation and a move to like bigger blockbuster games? What is that, Nicole?
Yes, I think that, like we said before, you know, games are bigger than ever. They're more expensive than ever. They take longer to create. And so that inherently means less risk is going to be taken. You know, we're seeing games that are sequels. We're seeing games that are based on existing IP, so that there is much less experimentation. And I think Diana was making was talking about live service games earlier. And those are games that are designed to be played for a really long time, like Fortnite. Fortnite is a live service game. It is continuously updated. They're not releasing new games, but they're releasing new things for that one game. And they have that player base already invested in that. So, you know, you see, you can see why they're investing in that, because the player base is already there. But Epic Games was one of the companies that laid off a ton of workers, 900 workers actually. And then couple weeks later announced that they had their biggest day in Fortnite ever.
Okay. So Diana, what's the impact of that on sort of what we want to believe is the inherent creativity, right, in this industry? Because as I hear Nicole describe it, honestly, the first thing that jumps to my mind is like the Marvel universe in films, right? There's going to be like an infinite number of Marvel films because they, you know, the studios know it makes money. But also, to Nicole's point about Fortnite, audiences are invested in the Marvel Universe. So, you know, to get moviegoers to come to the theaters, it actually makes sense for the blockbusters to be, you know, just almost everything that they do. Is there any, in the video gaming world, Diana, is there any consequence to that?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, I think, you know, you've just said it. It's really... Listen, I understand companies want to, they're trying to make money. They're trying to, you know, prioritize, make, you know, things that are sure bets. And you can see that, you could see that happening in the movie industry as well, where you have sequels, you have, you know, blockbuster movies that are constantly being made. You want to get the sure bet, you want to get your money. Cool. That's fine. That's happening in the industry as well, in gaming, you know, where you have even like to on the other end of that, live services actually now, I think companies are also, the gaming companies are also kind of looking at the validity of live service games. Like, do we want to continue investing in, you know, creating a new live service game where, you know, where the market right now is inundated in all of these different types of live service games. You like, if somebody's going to be playing Fortnite, you know, and that's their main game, you have to work extra hard to try and pull that person away from Fortnite to play a different brand new type of game. So, you know, even the sure bets that, you know, where a lot of you know, my friends and I in the industry and in the business side, we're talking about, like, games that were supposed to be sure bets and are supposed to be sure bets aren't sure bets anymore. You know, a game that, like, a couple of years ago, you know, has the star power, that has the, you know, the game mechanics, that looks great, that, you know, has the money and the marketing to get it out there, even that's not a sure bet, because you have to convince people to pull away from the game, the live service games that they already have. So it's a double-edged sword. You know, in the midst of all this, the saturation of these live service games, you know, now these companies need to go, well, crap, we just put ourselves in a position where anything new we have to work doubly hard to pull people away from the stuff that we made. And that's what we're seeing. And so even, listen, if we look at the positive aspect of this, where we're going, with the layoffs, people are going to still create. People are still going to make newer games. People are going to make smaller games. And frankly, I think that maybe that's where these companies should be focusing on. They should be focusing on smaller games that don't take many, many, many years and don't take multi studios and don't take, you know, thousands of people, hundreds of people to make, you know? So that is the change that I think the industry needs to, at least these executives, need to sort of start thinking about. Mm-hmm. They may be.
Yeah. Well, let me just jump in here because I have so many questions about what you just said about smaller games. And let me turn back to Nicole for a couple of them. One is that I've been throwing around the names of some of the bigger companies in the industry. Is this spate of layoffs also having an impact on, I don't know, independent developers or smaller companies?
It is having an impact on smaller companies as well. You can see layoffs across companies of all size. You know, for a company about 100 people, one that comes to mind is Ascendant Games. It was still a video game that cost a lot of money to make, but a smaller studio compared to others. They laid off half of their staff. But even studios that are smaller, that are within the dozens, some of them are shutting down entirely. Mm-hmm. We can see that across the industry. In studios of all sizes.
Okay, for the smaller studios, and why are they? Why, I'm still not clear about why they're shutting down entirely. Is it that they're not as profitable as they want it to be, or are they being outcompeted? What is it?
Yeah, I think it is about being about the competition in the industry, but it's also about the people who are investing into those studios mm-hmm. are making less investments as well. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they don't have the money coming in that they might have. And the indie game space is where you see all that innovation. It's the more experimental area, and they need that support from the investments on the outside.
I got it. So investors not making their expected return. Well, let's actually put a pin in that because it has a lot to do with what Rachel Cederberg told us as well. She's the senior economist and research manager at Lightcast. And she told us that, look, these decisions, these managerial and labor decisions are not being made in a vacuum. We've mentioned that this is going on across the tech sector. And leaders being aware that other companies are also sort of tightening their workforce could be playing a role, at least subconsciously.
There might be some thought towards, okay, well, my competitors are behaving in this manner, so maybe I should think strategically about, is this the right decision for my company? And so they want to be as competitive as possible. And those strategic moves that company A makes, company B has to take into account when they're thinking of how competitive can I be in this space where there are many, many players.
So, Nicole, the question that comes into my mind after listening to Rachel is, even though we've been, in a sense, focusing on, well, are companies making their quarterly return? Are they missing it by a little? And the short-term decision-making that comes out of that. In a sense, there's a form of long-term decision-making that also has to be made here because, look, if shareholders do not get their expected return, or investors, right, in smaller, independent developer companies, what happens is, they pull their funding or share price goes down. And if you're a CEO of a company and that happens, you're thinking, well, it's going to be a lot tougher for me to raise capital in the next quarter or in the next year to work on these, these games that we don't know what the return would be because they're not automatic blockbusters. There is a connection there which doesn't necessarily have to do with like personal greed in terms of what a CEO might make mm-hmm. and not treating their workers like they matter. But it's more of, if we're going to keep going in this competitive atmosphere, we have to make some tough decisions. What do you think about that? Nicole.
you can see this happening and you can... I think the industry is so competitive, and that's why you see the decisions, Rachel was saying, with the companies that are seeing other people make these decisions and then thinking, oh, I need to do that too. I think one of the earlier companies that did this was Microsoft. They laid off 10,000 people, and hundreds of those were from the game industry as well. So I think that other companies were looking towards that. They were looking towards even the company, the layoffs in the wider tech world, like Twitter as well. And those were also an impact. Those also impacted the video game industry.
Yeah. And Diana, I'm sure you have a thought or two about what I just asked. So you want to jump in?
No, I mean, I agree. Again, I understand the business part of it. I understand all of that. I think in the end of the day, you know, these are the sort of things that the inevitability of business, and I respect that. I understand that, but once again, I'm thinking about the workers. I'm thinking about the people that, you know, that are around me who are saying that they're stressed, yeah. And you know, that they're sick, you know, or whatever. And those are the people that I'm thinking about. And so like my brain, I understand the business side of it 100%. I get all of that. I get it. But you can't even think about the QA person who's working, you know, 60 to 70 hours for $10 an hour. Like, you can't even think about that. Like, and this is where, like, not to bring it back again, but where we have to really think about worker protection. Mm-hmm. And we have to think about these particular people who are, you know, who are killing themselves to make these quarterly earnings.
Yeah.
To hit these numbers. I said it earlier, the industry is fairly young in you know, and Hollywood has been around for 100 plus years, you know, so they've had the time to sort of figure their stuff out. The gaming industry, we're at a point right now where we need to figure our stuff out, and we need to start thinking about the future and how we take care of the people who work here, because late, like, you know, we're going to have a brain drain. Like,
yeah.
We're not going to have people mm-hmm. left.
Actually, it's perfectly fine for you to bring it back to that, because I think this is really one of the strongest undercurrents here. So interesting to me, Diana, that you came from the world of theater, right?
Yes.
There is worker representation, obviously, in...
I'm a union member in the theater.
Yeah.
In theater.
And when we talked to Paula about Cyberpunk 2077... They joined a union after that. And again, mm-hmm. coming back to Hollywood, I've been talking about correction in terms of, you know, financial corrections, right? And you know, 10K forms of corrections that have to be reported to the SEC. But workers now in these media, entertainment, tech industries are also demanding a correction, right? And that's mm-hmm. what's been going on in so many different places. So, Nicole, I don't see that as abating, as you said earlier. Do you think that could have the potential to change how the big developers run their companies or the kinds of products they expect to put out?
Yeah, I do. I think that unions coming into these bigger companies gives workers a seat at the table. It gives workers say in how they want to do that work. It might not impact decision making on that. That top level, you know, maybe not decision making on, you know, what games are coming out of this, but I mm-hmm. think that it could help with timelines. It could help with, mm-hmm. you know, eliminating some of that crunch and protecting workers from doing that. Right, right,
yeah, like,
right. Severance
exactly.
minimums as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Health insurance, because a lot of people were laid off without health insurance. These are company transparency, salary transparency, because there's a huge thing. I think that we need to have these serious conversations.
Yeah. Well, hopefully we can keep doing them, because this industry is actually huge and too important to not pay closer attention to. So Diana Laura joining us from Austin, Texas today. Diana, thank you so much.
Thank you. My goodness. Wonderful chat.
And Nicole Carpenter, senior reporter at Polygon, with us from New Haven, Connecticut. Nicole, thank you so much for bringing your reporting to the show.
Thank you, Meghna.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.